paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found Nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hour number two of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, and our fearless leader, Ryan Porth, with us today here on Monday, reacting to a Steelers 27-24 win against the Tennessee Titans. We're going to have Corey Curtis from News 2 join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us at 7:30 to break down what was a debacle for the Vols this weekend as well against the Alabama Crimson Tide. So, a lot of fun coming up here on the show, reacting to a, I guess, a memorable weekend for the wrong reasons in football here in Tennessee, Joe.
Yeah, not a terribly surprising one in Knoxville, and not a surprising final score. But boy, this Titans game all over the map, wasn't it? It really, I mean, just I'm like, this is a 55-10 Power Five team against FCS team blowout turned to, oh, the Titans are going to win this game.
Yeah, it was like three different games.
It was.
Even in the last part of it, I thought Tannehill had enough to come down and win that game for the Titans. The intentional grounding penalty hurts them, and then you're lining up for a field goal, and it's a 46-yard field goal. Steven Goskowski had already made one from 51 in that game. I thought he was going to make it. I'll be honest. Like, I thought when they lined up, I was like, this is what you brought this guy in for. It's a high-pressure situation, but it's a high-pressure situation that Goskowski has been in time and time again. So it's not like he's out there shaking in his boots or anything like that. And he just pushed it. He pushed it wide right. We had a texter on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, ask earlier if there was anything wrong operationally. It didn't look like it to me. It looked like the snap was good. The hold was there. Laces out as the kickers want. Brett Kern did a good job there. He just missed it. And they flashed a stat on CBS after the kick. Steven Goskowski this season, 5 of 11 from 50 yards and in. That's just, that's unacceptable. I mean, that's below 50% from inside 50 yards. And now, to his credit, I think he's perfect outside of 50, but I'd make that trade-off any day if I'm the Titans. You have got to be reliable from inside 50, and right now, and this guy's just not, and that's a huge problem for this team.
Yeah, it's crazy, too, because usually when you get up there in age, you expect those kickers like him who have been so accurate, he's one of the most accurate kickers in NFL history, to be still reliable inside, maybe take a little distance off them, but I mean, he's had extra point issues, too. He has missed the most kicks overall in the NFL this year. If you take into account extra points that he's missed, too. He's also, again, week one, week two, week three, clutch field goal. I mean, we thought he still might get cut after week one, right?
Yeah.
After hitting that game-winning field goal. He does it the next 2 weeks as well. I did, too. I agree with you. I thought that he was going to make that kick. And the fact that he does it now, you also look at that like, gosh, how do you feel about him moving forward? I mean, some of this whole season is it's him and it's these pass rushers we just talked about. Just, you know, you can try to make moves for John Robinson. You got a trading deadline coming up in a week, but a lot of it is like, please play Bledder. Please play better. Please make the kicks. Get a sack every once in a while. I mean, we're paying you money. Like, you know, I mean, the Titans made a big move to get him. They got some guys that they've let go who are making kicks for other teams right now in this league.
Yeah.
And this was one of those things that was supposed to maybe push them a little bit closer to the top, having this legendary all-time great kicker in the fold. And when you miss one like yesterday, and then you look at everything, 10 for 16, I don't know. It's all of a sudden back on the list of concerns.
And it's interesting because we spent all show long breaking down the defense and what's gone wrong there. We've got a poll up at 102.5 The Game on Twitter that just says, following yesterday's loss to Pittsburgh, what's your bigger concern for the Titans? Is it the defense or is it Steven Gostkowski? I kind of figured that this poll would be close. Right now we're about 250 votes in. 74% say the defense is more concerning than Steven Gostkowski. I think when you look at the kicking right now, look, I've heard the argument of, all right, who are you going to go out and get if you're the Titans that's any better than Steven Gostkowski? And if the answer when Steven Gostkowski's at the top of his game is nobody, maybe nobody in the league is better. The problem is 5 of 11 inside 50, that's not a very high bar. You could find people that could do that. Am I confident that Tucker McCann could go 5 of 11 inside 50? Yeah, I think if you make it to the NFL, you probably should be able to do that. This is a problem, and I understand he's made some big kicks this year, and I understand that his pedigree is what it is. But if he can't be any better than this inside 50, I'm not sure how much longer, if you're the Titans, you can deal with this.
So he's 10 for 16. Now, two of the six misses were blocked. So if you want to give him a break on two being blocked, you could say, you know, he's 10 for 14 on non-blocked kicks. But, yeah, it's – I mean, look, I agree. It's we're back on Gostkowski watch, which is exactly what was happening early in the season. And then, you know, he goes to Minnesota, and the only reason they win that game is he's just nailing everything. It's like, okay, he's figured it out, and he's red hot, and they're good. But whatever it is, I don't know. He wore socks yesterday. Is it as the weather gets cold, does he have to just
take socks off, man,
deal with it and just, you know, keep the feet in a warmer while he's over there? I don't know. But it's back on the list.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh texts in, the kicker didn't lose or win the game. If he made it, it sent them to overtime. Whoever won the toss would have won the game. But it's just the grounding call. He should have just fallen or took the sack, and then the defense not being able to get to Big Ben in this league, you've got to be able to get to the quarterback. I understand. I don't want to put yesterday's loss squarely on the shoulders of Steven Gostkowski. I realize that. That's not fair to do, and that's not the reason they lost the game. But you also need your kicker to make that kick and send it to overtime and give you a chance to go win the game in overtime, even though you didn't play well in the first half on either side of the ball. You found a way to make enough plays defensively to get yourself back in the game. And the kicker has one job. It's not like he's sitting there all week in meetings throwing passes to people. He is kicking the ball. His job is to kick the ball between the posts. And he didn't do it. And you need him to do it at times where it matters the most. That's why you go get a guy like Gostkowski who can do that and who can be clutch. So I get it. It's not fair to put the whole game on him. But, I mean, they're flashing up something on the screen right now on Good Morning Football on NFL Network. Gostkowski's missed more kicks than anybody else in the league this year. You can't have that. I mean, that's just unacceptable for somebody of his pedigree.
No, I agree. I mean, look, it's – now the question is, what would it take for them to be convinced that, you know, they've got to look elsewhere? And what could they go get? Like, I don't even know Greg Joseph right now. I mean, they have McCann in the practice squad. From what I saw of McCann and Kant, I would not make that switch right now. You know, I guess if day after day he's just figured out some consistency, then, you know, I guess you could look at it. But so Joseph's with the Bucs right now? Is he back with the Bucs? Is he on their practice squad?
I believe so. And then Succop just kicking away
Succop,
out there.
Right. Succop is – yeah, I mean, the Bucs are like, we'll take all your kickers. Succop's doing great. Yeah, it's amazing how this has all worked out because, you know, Succop came back too early last year. He's been a big part of this. I mean, that Succop, Brinkley, Kern trio for so many years, a big part of this team. He comes back too early. He's not good. They have to move on from it. They'd probably wish they had him right now.
Probably so. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a text that says, I don't know how you can logically say the kicking game is more of an issue than the defense. I'll take three game winners and one game tying miss versus the opposite. Offense played bad, too, in large parts yesterday.
Yeah. Now, look, if I'm giving I haven't done my vote. I will make my vote. Are we allowed to vote on this? Can I vote?
Yeah. Absolutely, right. Joe.
Well, I'm going to make
my
vote.
There's no restriction. I voted defense, by the way.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for the defense, too. I agree. And, yes, you're right. Game winners, they count. That's why their record is where it is. It's just moving forward. You feel like the guy's going to kick a 43-yarder for you when you need one in the fourth quarter of a game. After yesterday, you can't feel as good about it. And it's just inconsistent. And you don't want inconsistent at that position. And as you pointed out, Robbie, you really don't want it where it's inside 50. Those are the ones that you've got to have.
I can live with you missing 50 or more. I mean, once you get to 50 or more, it's basically 50-50 in the league. You can miss those. He's perfect.
Sure.
From beyond 50. And that's the more mind-boggling part to me. Quickly, let's go back to the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Tommy texted in, were the players wearing the wrong cleats yesterday? I saw a lot of our players slipping. There was a lot of falling down going on yesterday. And if you saw that field on Friday night in the National SC game and the monsoon that happened, I would imagine it was still pretty slick from that game Friday night with Nashville SC.
We were talking about it in the press box yesterday. The field right now, yesterday, looked like the field looks in December. And I have to assume some of that is, you know, Nashville SC playing. Of course, they would normally not be playing anymore at this point, right? So I wonder if the Titans are unhappy about that, the way things have worked out. You know, again, with everything that works out this year, we are in a pandemic. But, yeah, I think the field was right now is pretty chewed up. And actually, on one stop, the Titans had two straight plays. I think Connor fell, and then the receiver fell, and they got a three and out out of it. Like, that's their three and out was because the field, the turf monster, came up and bit the Steelers twice. But I don't know about the wrong cleats, but, yeah, the field is definitely more, I think, impacted right now than it normally is, but this time of year.
When we come back, we'll continue to get your reaction to the Titans' loss against the Steelers yesterday. Also asking the question, what's the bigger concern, the defense or the kicking game with Steven Goskowski? Give us your reaction, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It's a 45-yard attempt officially. For the tie, Goskowski! No good! The Steelers are going to hold on against the Titans.
How confident are you in Goskowski right now after that last one?
Confident that he'll make the next one. You know, it's unfortunate. I fully expected him to make it. He expected to make it. And, you know, it didn't turn out that way. So we all have a lot to improve on, starting with me and then going all the way down to the coaching staff and the players.
That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel discussing his confidence level in Steven Goskowski after the miss yesterday at the end of the game as the Titans fall 27-24 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, breaking down the loss yesterday and asking the question, what's the bigger concern to you right now, Steven Goskowski and the kicking game or the Titans defense, particularly on third down? Right now, the overwhelming response has been the defense. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Terry from Clarksville, who wants to weigh in. Terry, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
You bet. Now, first, real quick, I just want to say, how much did we miss Taylor Lewan yesterday? Because I don't know. Now to the defense. Maybe in a couple of years, we're going to find out that Vrabel is just some kind of genius, and he's figured out something new, because it's like the defense is playing the Derrick Henry mindset. We let the other team run a while, then we tackle them. We let them run a while, then we tackle them. And eventually, come the third and fourth quarter, we wear them out. Because that's what it looks like in the first half of many games.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Terry. We appreciate it. I mean, it is interesting. They have been – you're pushing the boundaries of bend and don't break. And what you said earlier, Joe, I think is interesting. And I don't even remember if it was on the air or off there, but we were talking, like, at some point – like, just man up and see if they beat you over the top. They're not getting beat a ton over the top. I think back to the game against Houston and Will Fuller's touchdown, but that just looked like a total breakdown in communication with Malcolm Butler there. But they're not getting beat a ton deep so far this year. At some point, maybe you just got to switch something up and go man-to-man and take the risk of getting beaten deep, but also maybe you're able to cover a little bit longer and the pass rush can get there at that point. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they still got beat in man yesterday, just not over the top, but there was just some times I thought where they're playing off coverage or they're playing like a softer zone, and it's like Roethlisberger is going to eat you for lunch there, you know, especially with the lack of pressure. So, yeah, maybe I think more aggression yesterday in general seems like it would have made sense until he does show you that he can throw it effectively 25 yards downfield. He never had to do it. I mean, there was one time, and I don't know exactly what happened, but that Juju Smith-Schuster play in the fourth quarter on the drive that ended up in a pick, but again, the drive that ate up most of the fourth quarter, he's just all alone over there. I don't know if that was a mix-up or not, but I think you're right. They haven't been beaten over the top a lot this year. I mean, Justin Jefferson got them. Different teams are going to challenge him in different ways. Well, I mean, Deshaun Watson got him too.
With Will Fuller. But Justin Jefferson was more like catching and then, hey, I'm faster than all of you, and you're not going to catch me.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But it's like it depends on the quarterback too. Yesterday was one of those games where maybe I'm wrong, and he just didn't have to do it, but I'd make him show it.
I would too. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan in Nashville texts in, you can't blame the kicker for the loss yesterday. How much did the Titans pay Clowney for this season, and what has he done? The fan base is starting to really be done with Jadeveon Clowney, and I'm not willing to go there yet. I still think there's enough talent that hopefully as the season goes on, he gets better and can make some big plays for you down the stretch. But it's hard to argue at this point that he has been a major disappointment through six games.
Yeah. No, he has been. And I don't know the answer there other than hoping that he turns it around. And the knee is a weekly thing with him now too, which doesn't bode well for that. But
they are paying Clowney and Beasley a combined $20 million.
Yeah.
And they have zero sacks up until this point.
It's a little more than that, right?
Yes.
9.5, and it's at least
almost 22.
Over $20
million. Yeah, yeah.
And they have zero sacks.
Right, and Clowney has
paying me nothing. I got zero sacks.
It's so frustrating.
It's awful
that for the last number of years they cannot find a pass rusher to save their life.
Right, like you had Arakpo before he started.
He
to
was
fade.
Solid. Derek Morgan was serviceable.
Right, those two guys in 16 had a pretty decent thing going.
Sure, I'd say Landry is serviceable, but Clowney leads the league in almost sacks, and then Vic Beasley just goes AWOL.
Yeah, and look, we knew that Clowney was not going to be like this big sack guy, but getting shut out through six games, I mean, come on.
Right.
You got to do something.
Well,
it's not like he's making a big impact in the running game either.
Well, that's the thing. So, well, hey, when he came in, I got to raise my hand and say, okay, three sacks. He could have four or five this year and have a great year. Okay?
Yeah.
So the problem is, yeah, he was supposed to make this big impact in the run defense. And that's not good enough. The run defense is not good enough. It was not – it's not – it's way down the list from yesterday because the Steelers didn't really – although I was surprised to see the number of 20 for 82. You know, they ran for 94 yards of the team, but it's still – like they aren't setting the edge like they're supposed to be, and he's just not making an overall impact like I thought he would without having sacks. Yeah, then you have zero on the sack counter, and it's like, so what do you do here?
Like the first two or three weeks, I was willing to give Clowney a pass because he really didn't participate in any practices during training camp.
Right.
But at some point, he's got to show up in a big way.
Well, you're past that point. The training camp excuse is
exactly
gone.
Exactly. And what was it, Jay Feely in the Buffalo game? He's like, oh, Clowney's still, you know, getting into shape.
Yeah,
like
we can't get to week 12 and you're still trying to get into shape.
Right.
Right.
Yesterday was a game where Clowney needed to show up, and Beasley too, and get to Big Ben. And personally, I felt like that was a pretty big reason why they went 13 for 18 on third down.
Oh, ooh,
they couldn't get to Big Ben.
Well, yeah. No, look, 61%, if you break that down to me, yeah, you could look at like the coordinator, the whole picture of it, but I'm starting with that. They can't get pressure, and they're not even manufacturing pressure like they did last year. Not even close. They're not whether they're not whatever is happening that Dean Pease did is now not happening.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, we've got Shane Bowen calling plays right now. I don't want to criticize him too much because You know, he's not the defensive coordinator. You give him the title, maybe you can criticize him a little bit more. But I don't think it's as simple as just the play caller. But there's obviously a big-time drop-off in what we're seeing right now, calling plays from Dean Pease, and we expected that. I understand that. But should the Titans go a different route at this point, given the way things have gone defensively? I realize we're only six games into the year, but do you feel bad enough now about the way the defense has played that you go a different route in the play calling and take it away from Shane Bowen?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, you could. You know, I think Vrabel already is very, very heavily involved, and he probably looks at it like a co-DC kind of thing, and maybe that's why he didn't want to name someone. But do you flat out take that away from Shane Bowen? I guess. Will we know that?
Probably
I don't
not.
Know. Like how much already is Vrabel vetoing stuff? I'd guess some. You know, I think it's also the whole week leading into it too, though. And just listening to Byard yesterday, like there's something that's missing there. And I again, beyond like we know it's DNPs, but there's something that's not happening, either communication with guys on the field. And you see it sometimes before the snap too. You see it sometimes with the DBs. I don't know if it's confusion, but there's definitely some barking before the snap at times that looks like a defense that isn't totally connected.
Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Josh from Kentucky, who wants to weigh in. Josh, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Well, last week I made a big deal. I talked about the soft zone they were playing, and as I was watching the game, if you go back, I could pick out who Ben was throwing the ball to every time, and it's not the corner's fault. When you're laying off 10 yards and Ben's taking the 5-yard underneath pass, I mean, the Titans coaching just gave them what they wanted all the way down the field. And especially this week, I was hoping they wouldn't play that way, because all that the Steelers wanted to do was take time off the clock. And that's what they were able to do, because Ben was just taking what the coaches were giving him. I don't think the corners – I mean, last week with the Texans, when they blew that coverage and they got a touchdown, that's on the corners. But when you're throwing 5-yard underneath, and I think they're doing a halfway decent job of tackling people in open space, but – the coach has got to stop laying off 10 yards and giving them that soft zone all the way down. And it's hard to get pressure when they're not giving you somebody to put pressure on there. Put an extra lineman in, send blitzes. They hardly did it. And then in the second half when they started sending some blitzes, they started doing a little bit better. So I'm just wondering why the coaches keep doing that and giving 3 yards to people, especially on like third and short. They still lay off 10 yards.
Hey, that's a great point, Josh. Thanks for calling in. Joe, I'll let you respond to that real quickly, and then we're going to get to Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. But there is something to be said. They were playing pretty far off the line yesterday, and Big Ben was just taking exactly what they gave him all day long.
Yeah, a lot of little third down dumps, you know. They didn't throw at Butler a lot much, but like a big third and seven to I don't remember who it was to, but it was a slant on Butler, third and seven on that last drive that, again, got no points, but ate up 8 minutes a clock, which really is a huge part of them winning the game. So, yeah, I agree that sometimes it's frustrating. Like, I know it's easy for us to sit here and say, be more aggressive, but at times it did look like Roethlisberger's like, okay, he's right there. It's going to be real easy and short and just dink and dunk all day.
When we come back, we'll switch gears. We'll get into Tennessee's loss over the weekend to a high-powered Alabama team. That's next. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Taking you through this Monday morning after a forgettable weekend for the local football teams here in our state. And to help us talk about a little bit more of the Tennessee Vols, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, good morning. Doing well.
So, Josh, what were your big takeaways for Tennessee's perspective in their 48-17 loss against Alabama on Saturday?
Well, it could have gone better for Tennessee. I think most are in agreement on that. I thought Tennessee's approach on offense was pretty clear, run the football, even if it was in a position, if the Vols were in a position where they needed to throw to have a better chance to move the sticks and continue drives. I had a huge issue with Tennessee kicking a field goal on 4th and 2 at Alabama's 15. I know that they were able to get out of there with points, but I don't know what good a field goal does for you when you're going up against Alabama, especially already down 14-0, and defensively they just had some very obvious issues going up against Alabama's offense, and I'll include that as well. But it just went poorly, and the last few weeks have been really rough for Tennessee football, and that means the next 2 weeks are really important. The Vols have an off week on Saturday and then have Arkansas a week from Saturday, and that is a huge game for Tennessee. And what, 6 weeks ago, I don't think too many people were saying, man, that Arkansas game is going to be a big one for Tennessee, but right now it kind of feels that way.
So anything surprise you, Josh, good or bad, about this game?
Well, I thought in positions where Tennessee could be more aggressive, I thought they would be. I expected Tennessee to try to run the football. A third and seven, third and eight, where you really need to pick up a first down, I wouldn't necessarily expected that kind of run rate. Jerry Garantano, I thought, played okay in what they asked him to do. I thought that we would see multiple quarterbacks throughout the game, but I also thought that Jarrett might struggle at different times and they would use that opportunity to maybe give Brian Maurer a shot. We only saw him at the end, and that didn't really mean anything. But Tennessee defensively has shown signs of concerns, and against Alabama, that was really amplified. So overall, not too much. I thought my score prediction was 44-17, or what was it, 48-17. So it went close to what I expected, but I thought that Jeremy Pruitt would be a little more aggressive in certain spots, and he was not.
Josh, Jeremy Pruitt, after the game, said that Tennessee is closing the gap between their program and Alabama. And as you can imagine, Tennessee fans on Twitter, a lot of them did not want to hear that after a 31-point loss to Alabama. What was your reaction to his comments after the game, and do you think Tennessee is closing the gap between them and Alabama?
Well, I think it's important that Jeremy Pruitt believes that and that he continues to express that to his players and to recruits, because Tennessee has recruited pretty well. Tennessee's done a good job on the recruiting trail, and this 2021 class is set up to be really good. They have to finish it out. Recruiting some of these guys might be more difficult over the next several weeks. We'll see how that plays out. We'll see how Tennessee continues to play. At some point, though, whatever Jeremy Pruitt says about it, whatever we say about it, is not really going to matter that much, because at some point you have to start showing results that the gap is closing. It's one thing to say it, but if you continue to go out there and lose in the big games and get blown out as often as he has, well, at some point that's going to be proven wrong. So these next five games are just so important, because we began the season thinking that Tennessee had made a big jump to where it had established itself as the third best team in the division. Who knows? By the end of the season, maybe that's where Tennessee still is. But the question was, can Tennessee go out there and compete with the best teams in the SEC? And that has been proven no. And by Jeremy Pruitt's third season, I promise you, he expected that they would be better than they are. So is Tennessee better than it was 2 years ago? Yes, I think so. But it's also, it's difficult to not be better after 3 years of recruiting and implementing your own system. It would be alarming to an incredible level if they weren't better than they were in 2018, just because of depth and recruitment and all that stuff. But is Tennessee where fans hope that it would be at this point, or Jeremy Pruitt or Philip Fulmer expected that Tennessee football would be right now? The answer is absolutely not.
Yeah, like, I understand what Jeremy was saying there when he started with, you know, I was on the other sideline. He was talking about 3 years ago, so I know that the gap is closed. And like you said, Josh, yeah, they've gotten better. They have more talent in the program. I just think that was, first of all, not the time to say it, and also maybe not the way to say it, because it's hard to talk about gaps closing when the scoreboard doesn't reflect it, right? But I will say, Josh, from my own interactions, I'm getting a little deja vu from a year ago, although I don't think it's quite as extreme, but it is amazing how quickly things can swing on the Tennessee head football coach. What's your temperature taking right now of the fan base on Pruitt and this coaching staff?
Well, I think I'm sensing a little bit of a divide among fans who are really frustrated and wanting to start to press down on the head coach, as often happens in college football, definitely happens with Tennessee football, and fans who are still very supportive of Jeremy Pruitt, and they don't want to hear or see anything that's negative about him or what is going on with the program or the team, and wanting to, in my opinion, make some excuses. I mean, at this point, blaming what happened on Saturday on Butch Jones is a little bit silly to me. Did Jeremy Pruitt inherit a challenging job? Of course he did. I think everybody agrees with that, right? But at this point, you have to start taking more responsibility. And I will say, at press conferences, Jeremy Pruitt does say, it starts with me, and the blame comes to me. But among the fans, I think you have a divide, honestly, among among those fans who have been supportive, because I think most fans are on board with Jeremy Pruitt in the last few weeks. Some have started to come more toward the frustrated negative side, having doubts about the future, while others are still very much supportive of what he's doing. And that's why these next few weeks are really important, because I think that Jeremy Pruitt can get fans back on his side if the Vols have success in the second half of the season. But those fans who are still clinging on, if Tennessee loses to Arkansas, I would say good luck to them. But, you know, against Texas A&M, Auburn, and Florida, there's a big opportunity to still prove himself, but there's also an opportunity to lose more fans if things continue to go poorly for Tennessee.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh, a breakout game on Saturday from Jalen Hyatt, and I want to talk about him and the younger receivers for just a second. Do you think there's a good chance, as this season continues to progress here, that we see more of the young guys at receiver, just given the speed element that they bring?
Definitely with Hyatt, how could you not play him more and get him more involved, especially with 2 weeks to get him more practice opportunity, because that is so important that Jeremy Pruitt continues to stress that. He was asked specifically after the game about playing young guys, even if they might not be ready. Well, Jalen Hyatt's ready. He has proven in practice, because he's been out there on the field on Saturday, and he's now proven in games that he can go out there and make plays. I would look for maybe Malachi Wideman to get more of an opportunity. And I do agree with Jeremy Pruitt. If you have young players who are obviously talented, but they've shown nothing in practice to say, let's count on them in big spots in the SEC, that you shouldn't go there. But I think in the next couple of weeks, Tennessee should look at some of those younger players on both sides of the ball. Tyler Barron and Morvin Joseph are two guys who have played some up front. Can they get more of an opportunity? If Jeremy Pruitt's been frustrated with the upperclassmen on the defensive line, well, can Amari Thomas get more of an opportunity? But at wide receiver, to your question there, absolutely with Jalen Hyatt. Malachi Wideman would be the next player I pay attention to. And then Jimmy Callaway and Jimmy Holiday are two other guys that are really well thought of. I would give them every opportunity to get out there in the field, because Tennessee needs more playmaking. Tennessee needs more speed on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would use Hyatt more. I mean, Hyatt and Palmer, to me, you know, could be a really nice combination if Hyatt can keep coming. But like you said, Josh, Jeremy did talk about that, about this extra time, looking at some of those guys. I thought going into this game we might see Harrison Bailey late, you know, at some point, and that maybe there would be sort of a movement with this extra time to get him ready, but doesn't look like that at all now. It looks like it's Garantano all the way. With maybe, I guess, Maurer stepped up and was able to play a little bit. Do you see any sort of shift there with this extra time, or is it all in on just trying to get the most out of Jarrett and feeling like your best chance of winning here down the stretch is with him at QB?
I would say maybe with Maurer, but the fact that he didn't really factor into the game plan that appeared on Saturday would leave me hesitant to say that, even with him. And it's difficult to get a read on exactly how the reps have been split up in practice, what kind of opportunity Harrison Bailey has really received outside of the Sunday scrimmages that they've held, but that hasn't seemed to be much for him on the field on Saturdays. Right now, it appears that they are still sticking with Jarrett Garantano as the quarterback, and I would be curious to see in 2 weeks if they come out and allow him to do more. There's a clear hesitation with him at quarterback, isn't there, in the passing game? But I also wonder if, let's say they had gone to Brian Maurer at some point on Saturday, would things have really changed within the offense? Would they have unleashed Brian Maurer to go out there and make a bunch of plays? I have a hard time believing that. Maybe he would have freelanced more because of his mobility and ability to escape the pocket and try to make plays. But my guess is that if Brian Maurer had gone into the game on Saturday, they still would have been mostly conservative offensively with what they want to do. So to me, I keep coming back to that question. Whether we're talking about Garantano on the field or Brian Maurer or Harrison Bailey, they just need better production, and they need better development with these players. Bailey's a true freshman, so judging him or diving too deep into what he's done as a quarterback, I think, would be unfair to him, especially not really believing that he's gotten too much of an opportunity to this point in practice. But that, to me, comes back to the results. Fans, I know, are ready to see a change at quarterback and are tired of seeing Jarrett Garantano, but all the other guys are the guys that Jeremy Pruitt has signed, and he has continued to stick with Butch Jones quarterback, and there's a reason for that. And whether it's Garantano or the other guys, they need better play at quarterback, but they need better play at a lot of the positions on Tennessee's football team.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh, last thing for you here. Jeremy Pruitt mentioned after the game Saturday that the secondary has really struggled in all five games this year. Are you surprised that they've had as many problems in the secondary as they've had so far?
Yes, I am. And I know that they have not had consistent personnel out there starting the season without Sean Schamberger. Alante Taylor has not been healthy. Bryce Thompson's not been healthy all the way through. But I still expected better play, and I'm sure that Jeremy Pruitt did as well. And there was the COVID effect. Remember the opener? They didn't have Jalen McCullough available too much because he hadn't practiced a lot out there, so they had Danico Slaughter playing. And Key Lawrence, maybe there's another young player. He came into the game late on Saturday, a Nashville prospect who's really talented and really well thought of and can play a number of different spots. And Jeremy Pruitt talked about him specifically multiple times, having to play safety and corner in practice, and maybe that's hurt him. Maybe in the next 2 weeks he's a guy that gets more opportunity in practice. But with Jeremy Pruitt and Derek Anfield and their history coaching defensive backs, yeah, I expected better play in the secondary to this point, and I'll repeat myself here again. I'm sure Jeremy Pruitt did too.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Josh, appreciate you joining us as always, brother. Great stuff.
Hey, you got it. Thanks, guys.
The secondary to me, Joe, if you were to ask me what the biggest strength of the defense was heading into this year, the secondary would have been right up there. I mean, you've got Bryce Thompson back there, Alante Taylor, Sean Schamberger. They got a lot of guys that have played a lot of football back there, and it's just been atrocious so far through five games in the secondary. I'm very surprised by that.
Yeah, I also think this matchup, and even without Jalen Waddle, is a different deal. And not to excuse what they did before, because I agree they haven't been as good. I also think that they could start looking a lot better here in the second half of the schedule. They don't have to face these guys anymore. That's the best offense in college football.
When we come back, where is this Tennessee football program right now through five games this year under Jeremy Pruitt? We'll dive into that next. But first, make sure tuning in to this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Fort's Acura. This Sunday's NFL game is NFC West matchup. The San Francisco 49ers taking on Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff, so make sure you're tuning in for that. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Obviously very disappointed. I'm not used to this for sure. And I know the players in our locker room, this isn't what they came here for either. These guys are hungry. They want to improve. And they will because of that. So we got a young football team that's going to work hard, and we got the last half of the season, to show that.
That was Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee head football coach, after the drubbing they took at the hands of the Alabama Crimson Tide on Saturday. 48-17 winners over Tennessee in Neyland Stadium. And look, this matchup, it's obviously been one-sided since 06, but it has not gone well for them inside Neyland Stadium. They have played much better in Bryant-Denny than they have in Neyland Stadium. It's been pretty incredible to watch, like, the margin of victory in Neyland for Alabama over the last decade plus. Yeah. I don't even remember the last time it was close inside Neyland. It may have been 06.
That's what I was just going to ask you. When's the last time? I've never seen anything remotely close between those two teams there. Not like it was that surprising, but there were a few things Saturday. One is, and Josh brought it up, like the Jim Chaney, some of those 3rd and 8 off tackles. You know, I know I'm the guy who's been like, hey, Jim, run the ball. And I thought they looked exactly like I expected up front. They were winning up front.
They played pretty well on the offensive line.
Yeah. No, they absolutely. I mean, Garantano at times had, like, it was like they were going against the Titans defense. He had a clean pocket all day to throw, and he made some good throws, and he made some bad throws. But he was not even close to the problem.
No.
But some of the calls, I just think Jim Chaney, he's got a lot to prove here. Among certainly Jeremy Pruitt, no
doubt. He's getting close to going on the blacklist for me. Getting close.
I mean, Jeremy Pruitt's made 12 changes. I tell you what, when you are publicly questioning your OC on some calls 1 week, and then things are going as poorly as they are, got to be looking at him as number 13 potentially. Now that's a lot of investment they've had in Jim Chaney, but just it's not all working out right now. That's some weird calls.
And it's interesting because I think there's been a lot of freak out on Vol Twitter this weekend. As we know, it can be a wonderful place.
Yes,
but
indeed.
They're 2-3 right now. They're one game off of where I thought they'd be at this point. I thought they'd be 3-2 heading into this bye week, obviously losing to Georgia and Alabama. And quite frankly, the margin of victory for Georgia and Alabama doesn't really surprise me all that much. You're going to look back on the Kentucky loss this year and say, what in the world happened? Especially when you look at how Kentucky looked against Missouri this past Saturday. That's going to be the game where if you're a Tennessee fan, you look back and you say, how in the world did they lose to Kentucky? I mean, and especially lose in the fashion that they did. So I don't think that this program is like way, way down or off schedule. I do think losing those type of games was something I thought they had gotten past, and obviously they're not. And that concerns you moving forward because heading into the season, you looked at Arkansas and you just chalked that thing up as a win. And let me tell you, it's going to be a struggle for Tennessee to win that game. I'm not saying they're not going to, but I think they're in for a fight against Arkansas, and I would not have guessed that heading into the season.
Yeah, one interesting stat my guy David Ubbin came up with is Pruitt has as many losses, I believe, by 20 or more, 12, and Dooley and Butch combined. Make sure I'm right on that. But, you know, that's an eye-opening stat. If you're making a case against Pruitt, this is where, you know, you can spin things. I mean, we're in an election year, and everything gets spun, right? And you can – if you are against Pruitt right now, you can say you got blown out by Kentucky. Like you said, look, Georgia, Alabama, how surprised are we really? I know that the Georgia game was two totally different games in one, but that's not surprising. 34-70 Kentucky is unbelievable. So if you're against, you can say that is, again, put it in that list of 12 blowout losses. It's ridiculous. I'm still going to say, like, they win 7 or 8 out of 10. Doesn't matter. They got blown out. But Kentucky, which just lost 20-10 to Missouri and looked like it has zero offense at all, that was one of those games that just again, your quarterback gives them 17 points inexplicably. So I'm not saying I give Pruitt a mulligan for that game because, like you said, you're supposed to be past it. You're supposed to be beating those teams. But it is one of those I separate it out and say it was just such a wacky game, right? Hey, it's about right now. Arkansas, I agree with you. That's a better defensive team than Tennessee, I believe, right now.
Yes. Without question.
Flat out better defense than Tennessee. In 1 year, they've figured that out with Barry Odom coming in there as D coordinator and Sam Pittman as head coach. And, like, they were atrocious the last few years on defense.
Well, and that's going to be the argument that some Tennessee fans make. Why is it that you have these coaches coming in different programs and figuring things out so quickly and turning things around so quickly, and yet we always hear, well, it's only Jeremy Pruitt's third year. Okay. I mean, Kirby Smart's second year, he had him in the national championship game. Now, I realize he took over a completely different situation.
He took over Ferrari. Yes.
Yeah, he took over a completely different situation, and I realize that. But it's not like it's out of the norm in college football for coaches to come in and they make an impact pretty early. And right now, look, I believe that Tennessee is better now than they were when Jeremy Pruitt came in here. And I think the roster is a lot better than it was when he came in here. But to sit there after the game on Saturday and talk about how you're closing the gap between Alabama and Tennessee and you just lost by 31, at best, that's tone deaf. And I don't blame Tennessee fans over the weekend for being like, dude, what are you talking about? We don't want to hear that. You just lost by 31 to Alabama. They lost their best player in the first play of the game, and you lost by 31. You're trying to sit there and tell me you're closing the gap? Get out of here with that stuff. Tennessee fans are tired of that.
Yeah. No, it was a bad move by him to say that. And, of course, he's asked about it. He's asked, like, are you disappointed that the gap is – or, you know, whatever he was asked. I think Jimmy Himes asked him, like, why is this not getting any better? So he answered how he answered. To me, you say as little as you can possibly say after something like that other than – it's unacceptable. We're going to get better. But it comes down to this next game is just so pivotal. Texas A&M is playing a lot better. Auburn, at least offensively, is very good. Those two games are going to be tough. You've got to beat Arkansas, you know, and flip it around. Get to 3-3 and get some momentum. Because if you lose to Arkansas, first of all, the negativity, there's no way it's easy to do that job anyway, but when the negativity is what it is, that's one of the reasons I was so impressed with Pruitt last year is when it was so bad after Florida, they did figure out a way to, and I know the competition wasn't great, but there was so much negativity around him and that program. I was impressed with that. Well, better show it again, and you better win this next game.
And we brought up the comments by Jeremy Pruitt after the game on Saturday talking about the gap closing between Tennessee and Alabama. I want to play those for those who may not have heard it. Here's what Jeremy Pruitt had to say after the game on Saturday.
Jeremy, are you discouraged at all by the gap between you and Alabama at this point?
You know, Jimmy, I was on the other sideline 3 years ago. You think I didn't see that? All right. And I can assure you that the gap is closing. It might not show on the scoreboard today, but the gap is closing. I can assure you that. And that's one thing that's frustrating to me. And it's frustrating to our players. Okay. Is there's times that we've done some really good things, but as a team, whether it's, you know, offense playing really good and the defense playing really good and special teams, we've not put any of that together. And that's what the elite teams in our program and are in our conference, that's what they do. Okay. They don't have many bad plays. They don't make many mistakes. They make the other team beat them. And there's times that we've done that this year, but we've not done it for a whole game, even for the games we've won, right? We've not done that. So this will be a great opportunity this next week to go back and see where we're at, to see where we've improved. And from that, we'll have an opportunity to kind of fix the things moving forward.
So I guess my follow-up question to Jeremy Pruitt there would be, all right, if it's not closing on the scoreboard, where is it closing? Because you've talked this season about maybe the effort on some plays not being there. You've talked this season about the preparation not being where it needs to be. You obviously don't have a quarterback that's ready to go behind Jarrett Garantano. You've got younger guys that haven't been able to step in and play yet. So where exactly is the gap closing would be my question to Jeremy Pruitt after that.
Yeah, and the only place you could really say is, like you said earlier, the roster's better. I mean, they are closer in terms of talent. But then, yeah, that it's like, so, okay, so why doesn't that show up on the scoreboard then? I think it could have in this game, maybe with a little bit better offensive coordination. I mean, at least closer, you know, not a close game. It was never going to be a close game. And frankly, I think there were some times in this game where I thought they had things covered exactly right and it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But
Mac Jones is pretty good.
He is, your guy. I'm turning around a little bit on your Mac Jones love.
It's pretty good.
He does. His receivers are okay too, but
lost his best one. Still look pretty good.
Fair. However, bottom line is with Tennessee, that's it. They have more good players, but where's the coaching that is leading them to show better results? Again, like you can't. This next game is, I think it's a watershed game for Jeremy Pruitt.
When we come back, we will dive back into the Titans. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us, and we'll ask the question, how in the world do the Titans go about fixing this defense as they move forward here? That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.